Hey, everyone. This is C.D. Carter from Roto-World, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
He's a fantasy football genius, okay?
Play action. Jackson looks right. Throws over the middle. He's got a man wide open. One-hand catch for the touchdown, Mark Andrews.
This is Fantasy Football Sunday with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry.
We're back.
Another edition of Fantasy Football Sunday. He's Evan Gentry. I'm Ty Richardson. We're going to the phone lines and welcoming in C.D. Carter. He writes over at Roto-World. He is running Draft Day Consultants. You can also watch him along with JJ Zachariasen on Living the Stream and follow him on Twitter at CD Carter 13. CD, happy Sunday, man. What's going on?
Not much. How are you guys?
Man, we can't complain. So, Dalvin Cook, man, has been going off these last 2 weeks. I was fortunate enough to draft him, and there's been a lot of speculation surrounding the Minnesota Vikings running back. Do you trade him while he's hot? So, CD, I'll pose that question to you. Should I try and trade Dalvin Cook away to get some hot commodities, man?
I don't know what that trade would look like to benefit you if you were to part with Dalvin Cook right now. I mean, he's one of the rare fantasy running backs who is, you know, going to be able to post big numbers no matter the game script, right? I mean, you know, he's not quite the pass-catching force that he was last year, but anytime the Vikings see positive or neutral game script, everybody knows, including the other team, where the ball is going to go, and that's to Dalvin Cook. So that just gives him a tremendous floor. It's really him and Alvin Kamara who have the safest fantasy floors of anybody in the game right now. So I guess for a king's ransom, I might trade him away. But honestly, it would take something, you know, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, he has been going off, and I picked up Madison off the waiver. So even if something, because we know about Dalvin's injury concerns since he's been in Minnesota. So even if something happens, I feel pretty confident as far as that goes. So Minnesota hasn't fared like many thought they would this season. That's really been the Packers' division to lose, and we know how good Aaron Rodgers is and stuff. But this year with Rodgers and Adams, man, that connection is seemingly unbreakable. But I wonder, CeeDee, with their chance to go get Will Fuller at the deadline, and we saw what Will Fuller did last week with that like 60-70 yard touchdown from Deshaun Watson, did the Packers make a mistake not adding to their wide receiver repertoire and giving Aaron Rodgers someone else to throw the ball to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Packers faithful and maybe the team itself would point to the return of Alan Lazard from his core muscle injury. He could return as early as this week against Jacksonville. But, you know, they would point to that as saying, you know, we're going to have our number two back. But there's no real comparison between Alan Lazard and Will Fuller. Will Fuller is an explosive wide receiver on the outside, someone who could have given, you know, Aaron Rodgers a deep target, you know, because whatever Adams is, and he is a lot of great things for Aaron Rodgers, he's not really someone who's going to burn people down way downfield, right? So that would have added an entirely new element, someone to kind of scare defenses, you know, into playing off the line, maybe back up safeties a little bit, create more room for Adams to work, for maybe Robert Tonyan to work in the middle of the field if defenders were scared of a guy like Will Fuller. So I think it was a huge mistake. I think that offense would have a whole new look if Fuller had been acquired. Yeah.
See, I've always kind of wondered this. For someone like yourself who analyzes fantasy football the way you do, where it's almost the science and it's target share, it's all these different percentages and whatnot, has that kind of shaded the way you can watch football? It's just from a fan perspective, where is it hard for you to really kind of just enjoy a game the old-fashioned way because you've programmed your mind to just pay attention to everything fantasy?
Of course. I mean, you know, and in many ways, fantasy, you know, ruins real football for
people. It does. It definitely does.
Really get into it. I used to be a diehard Dolphins fan for my whole childhood, you know, into teenage years, into my 20s. And, you know, at some point I had to, like, kind of admit to myself that, you know, the success of my fantasy team has mattered way more to me than the success of the Dolphins. So I stopped being a fan. Yeah.
Hey, at least you can admit it and you can go on from there, right?
I'm the same way with the Packers, man. I used to be a diehard Green Bay Packers fan, and fantasy just ruined that because Randall Cobb or Donald Driver or Brett Favre would just torch me. I was like, I can't deal with this, like, personally.
Sure. I mean, you have it feels like, at least it feels like you have more control over your fantasy team than your real team, you know, than the team you root for. But yeah, I mean, when you really get into like the heart of fantasy football, it is really difficult to watch a single game and not see, you know, fantasy stats. It's like looking at in the movie The Matrix, how they look at the screens and they have the green new numbers flashing up and down the screen. It's kind of like that, where everything you see is the lens of stats. Yeah.
This is kind of an overarching NFL question, less fantasy. What's the most interesting subplot right now to you in the NFL? You can kind of really take it any way you want to.
Yeah, I think the added playoff spot, I think you're going to see, you know, since teams will now, you know, we're only going to see one team in each conference get a bye week. And I think that will really change the dynamic of week 16 and week 17. You know, we as fantasy footballers are used to week 17 kind of not counting, you know, and a lot of people have their championships in week 16. It should probably remain that way. But I think, you know, many more teams will be pushing to win in that final week of the season. And I think that will change, you know, roster decisions. I think it'll change, you know, who's viable for fantasy, and you know, change the way that we make start sit decisions. So that's definitely a subplot I'm paying attention to.
I never considered that. That's a great point. I'm glad I asked. J.D. McKissick or Duke Johnson this week?
Great question. I mean, you know, Alex Smith brings J.D. McKissick's appeal way up, you know, and we saw that a little bit last week. We saw that when Alex Smith came in against the Rams after Kyle Allen went out in the first quarter of that game, and it was just constant dump offs to McKissick. And as much as everybody, including myself, wants Antonio Gibson to be the every down back, wants him to be, you know, the pass catching back, he's not. And I, you know, we kind of have to come to grips with that. So Deshaun Watson doesn't really check down, you know, and that's my concern with Duke Johnson. I wish he did, you know, and I wish I could say Duke Johnson, but I think I have to lean because of care.
We're talking with C.D. Carter here on Fantasy Football Sunday. He's a writer over at Roto World. C.D., when you think about the Ravens-Patriot matchup on Sunday night, now, we finally saw a Patriots win, but it was against the Jets, man. And we saw a couple wide receivers emerge. Is there anyone viable on that Patriots offense that you would consider starting against that salty Ravens D come tonight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the matchup is a disaster, you know, for all Patriots, obviously. You know, you're only starting Cam Newton if you're in Superflex, two quarterback league. So it's that kind of thing for the Patriots this week. But we can't ignore that Jacoby Myers is seeing an absolutely ludicrous target share with Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry out for New England. Really, it's just him and Damier Byrd are the only two guys being targeted in that Patriots offense right now. I think Myers, in a game where New England is going to see a lot of negative game script, most likely, I think that Myers, you know, his floor is 10 targets, and his ceiling is probably 15 or more targets in this game, and it will be going forward. And I really think if you have him in a 12-team league, Jacoby Myers, I really think you need to find a way to get him in your lineup this week.
So let me ask you about that, CD, because I'm in a 10-man league, and I was able to pick up Myers. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. I'm going to rattle off my wide receivers, and you tell me if there's anyone I should start Myers over. Mike Evans, who still seems to be in Brady's doghouse. Jerry Jeudy, who exploded last week. Juju Smith-Schuster, no Big Ben, or DJ Chark, who plays good with the – and who's the Jacksonville quarterback name that came?
Yeah. Gluten-free, Jake Luton.
Luton, yeah.
So is there any guy that I just listed that you would start Myers over, CD?
Yeah, I think I I would. That's tough. That's tough. I don't think you can bench Judy. honestly, I feel like you can bench Mike Evans for Myers, and I hate saying that. I'm an Evans guy, you know, but we can't ignore. We can't ignore that, especially with Antonio Brown in that lineup. He's the third option at best. And also consider the matchup. You know, you're talking about Tampa taking on a Panthers team that's really a run funnel defense. You know, teams have really beaten them on the ground this year and not through the air. So, you know, it could Evans save his day with, like, you know, with a touchdown or maybe two, maybe, you know, possibly, but it's I think it's very unlikely. I go by opportunity. You know, I base most of my decisions on opportunity, and I don't know who's going to see more targets this week than Jacoby Myers. I mean, you might be able to list five receivers who might see more targets, you know.
Well, CD, I'm just telling you, I just switched Evans out of my lineup, but I put Myers in, so if it doesn't work out, I'm coming after you, buddy.
Just remember, it's the process. It's the process of a result.
I'm sorry, my co-host here is making this his personal AMA. DJ Sharker, Hollywood Brown. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking.
Hey, this is the guy. You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday over the moon with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry. My boys. I just asked what their names were, but they're my boys.
Hey, this is Mike Clay from ESPN Fantasy. You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
Give our listeners a couple QB streamers you like this week, maybe outside of the top, you know, 7, 8, 9 guys that you're going to start every week.
Yeah, sure. So I actually think that both quarterbacks in the Vegas-Denver game are streamable, depending on the depth of your league, you know. I would prefer Derek Carr because, you know, process-wise, we like to start, and we talk about this on Living the Stream a lot. You know, we like to start quarterbacks who are going to see positive game script. The Raiders are home favorites here against the Broncos, and the Broncos banged up defense, particularly the secondary. And I think AJ Boye will be back this week, so that might change the calculus a little bit. But you know, they've been very generous secondary. We saw that last week against Atlanta.
You're not used to seeing that either. Every time I see Broncos jerseys, I just think like, 10 points a game.
Yeah, right. Bad matchup for fantasy. You know, Carr, I don't know if he has like a huge ceiling in this game or really any game, but I think he's a pretty safe streaming option. You know, Drew Lock is, you know, every week, anytime you play Drew Lock, you have to kind of expect kind of a volatile fantasy play, you know, a guy with a kind of a shaky floor, but a lot of upside because, you know, he rushes, which we like. We saw that last week against the Falcons. He takes deep shots all the time. I think he has the highest air yards per attempt in the league this year, which means that he's really pushing it downfield. Is he good? Is he accurate on those throws? No, he's not. But, you know, that's why.
You got half of it, right? You got half of it.
Yeah, that's what makes him volatile. So I do like those two guys.
Okay, there's two situations here as far as running back goes, two teams that I think are really unknown, and a lot of people don't know which way to roll. And I'll let you run with both of them here: Miami's backfield and the Chargers' backfield. If you had to, because we know people don't the running back situation, it's always tough. Where would you lean with those two teams?
Well, you know, I talked about this today on a podcast. The Chargers' backfield is a mess. I mean, you know, you have Justin Jackson. Probably won't play this week. You know, he got hurt early in the game last week against, I can't remember who they played, the Raiders.
And
he has not practiced this week. People should watch practice reports, obviously, but if he doesn't practice today, Friday, then he certainly will not play this weekend. The thing is, though, the running back Pope, whose first name I can't remember off the top of my head.
Trayvon, something like that. Trayvon Pope. Troyzon Pope, something like that.
Trayvon, maybe. So Pope is healthy. Pope is recovered. He's coming back from a concussion that he suffered 2 weeks ago. And Pope was the primary back. You know, inexplicably, he came out of nowhere, and he was the primary back before he got hurt, including pass catching duty. So I know Kalen Ballage was was, you know, kind of a freakish thing last week. I really see Pope coming to the forefront and maybe taking over that primary role.
We're talking with C.D. Carter. He runs Draft Day Consultants. C.D., when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver core, Evan and I are roommates. We watch NFL Sunday together. We got three TVs in the living room trying to pick up as much as possible. Man, I feel like it's a rotating circus merry-go-round with who's going to have a good week.
Yeah.
It's Claypool, Deontay Johnson, James Washington caught a touchdown, Juju caught a touchdown. Like, when you're looking at these games when the Steelers are matching up, how do you determine which Steelers wide receiver you should start if you have more than one on your team?
Yeah, well, I usually consult a Ouija board to decide.
that's the best solution I've heard yet.
Right, that's my process for Steelers receivers. You know, I think it's hard. You know, Deontay Johnson looked like the number one for a while. Claypool exploded, but then it was very clear that Claypool was not going to be a locked in every week option with Deontay Johnson back. You know, Juju's reemergence, and you know, I've read some Steelers beat reporters talk about how Juju is healthy for the first time this year, or healthier than he has been. And I think we're seeing that. And I think that we're seeing that Juju is kind of the go-to guy for Ben Roethlisberger. So I don't think that Juju comes into every week, including this week, with like a tremendous ceiling, right? But in PPR formats particularly, I think he's probably the preferable play, you know, like if you're looking for a nice solid floor. But again, like you said, it goes up and down all the time.
CD, the guy I'm sitting next to is a Baltimore Ravens fan, so he was obviously disappointed in the outcome when the Ravens played the Steelers. But then the Steelers followed that up with barely beating Dallas and Gucci DiNucci. So I wonder, with this Steelers team, and I know Big Ben is always going to have some sort of injury, or at least he plays it up that way.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a believer, CD, in the Pittsburgh Steelers as Super Bowl contenders, especially since they're going to have to go through the Kansas City Chiefs to get there?
Yeah, I think they are. I think you have to say yes. You know, I would think that the Chiefs have a pretty big edge on the Steelers right now. But you have to remember, and this is just an anecdotal take of mine, but the Steelers play down to their opponents and also play up to their opponents. And they have for some time.
For 20 years. How does that stay consistent? It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, the two craziest things is that every Chargers game ends the exact same way, and the Steelers always play down to the competition.
It's amazing.
So I think, I think you have to consider them. But, you know, there is something about the way they play that makes me very skeptical of the Steelers as a front runner, you know, for a championship.
Yeah, I kind of think the same thing. It's record be what it is. You watch them and you can parse any team in the NFL. So it's not to say that, you know, you'd pick six of the teams better than them, but it does almost feel like a little bit fragile at times and that things really need to go, well. Is this, I mean, I, you know, that you can go redraft league, you can talk dynasty, and I guess the answer may be a little bit different, but are we watching the next Trent Richardson in front of our eyes here with Jonathan Taylor? How can they not get him on the field? I mean, you watch the game on Thursday night. They're at the goal line, which should be his territory, and it's Nyheim Hines, and it's Jordan. It's basically everybody but Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I think the team is telegraphing what they think about Jonathan Taylor, which is that, you know, he's not going to be the guy, you know, and that stinks, you know, for fantasy purposes. You know, we thought taking him in the third round was like an arbitrage play on some of the first and second round running backs. Turns out that was incorrect. But, you know, I feel like I saw a funny tweet the other day that said Jonathan Taylor is our generation's David Montgomery, you know.
That's funny.
You know, they feel very similar, right? They were drafted to be, you know, centerpieces, linchpins in their respective offenses, and it's just not happening. You know, Montgomery, they're giving him the ball 20, 25 times a game now that Tariq Cohen's down, and it's nothing. So Yeah, I mean, at Taylor, people should not feel obliged to start Taylor, even in like 14-team leagues at this point.
CeeDee Carter with us here on Fantasy Football Sunday. CeeDee, one question before we let you go. When you think about fantasy football punishments, and I know that you do Living the Stream with J.J. Zachariasen, and you probably have a bunch of other people within the industry that you compete with on a yearly basis, what is the worst punishment that any of you, whether it's you or one of your coworkers or one of your friends, what's the worst punishment you had to go through? I'll tell you ours this year. It's the Joey Chestnut Hot Dog Challenge. 76 hot dogs in a week is what the loser has to eat. What's the worst punishment that you've had to go through or you just heard about?
In a week, you said?
In a week, man.
Oh, man, that'll wreak havoc on your digestive system.
Yeah.
I'll be thinking about that for a while. I'm not a fan of IPA beers, and one punishment we had a few years ago in a home league was that the loser would have to drink IPA beers and thankfully I did not finish last, my buddy did. He also does not enjoy an IPA, so he had to suffer through that. But you know, I think the punishment thing kind of maybe goes too far sometimes because
it definitely
I've had people call me or email me for draft day consultants, right? And they'll email me at week 8, right? And they'll say, "Look, I'm in last place. I'm trying to avoid the punishment for finishing last on the season. Please just help me do that. And I don't need to win the league. I just don't want to finish last." I said, "Well, what's the punishment?" And I've had several people say, "I can't tell you. I cannot tell you what the punishment is." I said, "Well, maybe you should consider not playing in the league where you can't even tell people how bad the punishment is for finishing last."
Wow.
It's the punishments have taken on a life of their own where it's, in my opinion, it gets to be too much. Oh, and this is a callback. It's Troy Main Pope. So no disrespect to the Pope family. Troy Main. We almost had it.
Yeah.
Troy Main. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Pay attention. If you're in a deeper league, pick them up.
CD, we've waxed legs. I've had to go to Comic-Con in a Harley Quinn outfit. Ours have been both emotionally and physically scarring, so I know exactly what you're talking about. CD, before we let you go, man, you mentioned Draft Day Consultants. You're a writer for Roto World. You also do Living the Stream, which people can pay for on Patreon. Just kind of tell everyone where they can read you and where they can hear you, man.
Yeah, so I write a couple of weekly columns for Roto World. I write about kickers for Living the Stream Patreon page. Not everybody uses kickers, but I take it very seriously. Some would say too seriously. And of course, I do the weekly podcast with my lovely co-host, JJ.
Well, CD, we appreciate your time this morning. And also, make sure you give CD a follow at CD Carter on Twitter. Man, we appreciate it this morning.
All right, thank you.
Hey, this is Field Yates with ESPN, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday. Hey, this is Scott Barrett with FantasyPoints.com, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
Great interview with CD Carter here on Fantasy Football Sunday. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it in its entirety, remember, you can subscribe to the Hit That Line podcast network, and you can always listen there. Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts, we are going to be found at Fantasy Football Sunday on the Hit That Line podcast network. All you got to do is type in Hit That Line. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you rate. Make sure you comment so we can get Fantasy Football Sunday and all these other great podcasts out there to as many listeners as possible. Let's start with what we saw on Thursday night between the Tennessee Titans and the Indianapolis Colts. First off, Evan, let me say I almost picked the Titans as my survivor pick. Thank the Lord I didn't.
I'm not. I don't want to jinx you here. So I say this earnestly, it kind of starts to feel like this is just the universe is coming together for you. I mean, I don't. Maybe it's ironic.
I'm gonna lose this week now.
No, and I don't. I don't. That's certainly not my intention. But you know,
I have won two straight fantasy weeks.
They dodged a bullet last night by not picking the Titans. And
start Titans D though. Not great.
You're with how many people left? There's
10. There's me and 9 others.
And whenever I, you know, because we live together, every time you are randomly cheering hard against one team, I can really deduct at this point that it's because it's for survivor purposes. And you have said on the record your intentions of using a little bit of the coin that you win would directly benefit me. So
what's the price?
You said a keg, right?
A keg
of Bike Rack IPA is what I heard.
It's not going to be that. It's going to be probably a refreshing Natural Light, Michelob Light, Busch Light, or
Bud Light. We can meet in the middle. Light. Okay, yeah. There we go.
I can absolutely deal with Bud Light doing that. I'm 100% on board with that. Yeah. So you have a little stake in the game too. So
I cheer for my friends. I never want to see my friend. Like I want to see my friends.
Except when they're playing the Ravens.
I wish my friends thought the same thing about me, but I don't know. I feel like sometimes that's not the case. Well, what do you say about Thursday night's game? No, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
Okay. To your point, we'll tie a bow on that conversation. It's hard to cheer for Oklahoma.
Well, maybe not. You don't have to do that.
I like Lamar Jackson. I have no problem cheering with the Ravens unless they're probably playing the Packers or a fantasy player of mine or against my survivor pick, which, by the way, I'm not picking a survivor pick against the Ravens. That's just stupid. But I feel like I've been pretty good about your Ravens.
You do. It's more of a philosophical thing, and I don't know what it is, but don't you feel sometimes like your friends, they want you to have a little bit of success, but maybe not too much.
Not just stay with.
Just like, well, you're good. You can live in this little area right here.
Just
but once
enough.
You start, once you start exceeding that, it's like, whoa, hold on. Part of it is too, and this is I know this to be true. It's misery loves company. If you're not, if you're not happy with your team result or whatever it is, then you can't have your friends be happy. It's something about like we all need to be. Listen, we ride together, we die together. We're staying in this little world. And no one's going to jump off the ship. We're in this together the whole way.
And I would say that's probably a fair assessment. And speaking of seemingly not having nice scenes, you want to just be kind of pull them down a little bit, bring them back to earth. The Tennessee Titans look like they were one of the NFL's best. And now they've been kind of pulled back to earth a little bit. And against, of all teams, the Colts on Thursday night. Phillip Rivers has been so inconsistent this season, but just dominated in every phase, offense, defense, special teams. They lose 34-17. Your thoughts on the Thursday night football?
Just through watching the NFL, is the divisional games a lot of times because the teams, you know, even if the coaching staff changes or even if the roster changes year to year, there's so much familiarity when you play a team twice every year that, you know,
and they get them in two weeks.
Yeah, it's hard to do the transitive property where, like, you know, team X is this, team Y is this, you expect this result. Those division games can kind of get funky. And when you know a team's tendencies and you can kind of get a team's roster and you can exploit the matchups you like, you see stuff like this. I think both these teams are really kind of on the same plane. It hasn't been great here for Tennessee the last few weeks. Like you said, coming back down to earth, they're 5-3. So I believe they both kind of share that division. And
lost, what, 3 of the last 4?
I believe so. And it hasn't, I know they lost to the Bengals 3 weeks ago too. You know, it hasn't necessarily been pretty with them. The Jadeveon Clowney experience is not necessarily working out. I did see something on Twitter this morning where I think he's being paid like $1 million per tackle so far this year.
I don't think he has a sack yet, does he?
I don't believe he, you can certainly question the merits of Mr. Clowney's motivation. And he doesn't have a long-term deal, and that's kind of what he wanted. And every time he misses a game or misses a drive because he's hurt, I really do think that's because he hasn't kind of inked the deal he wants yet, but I don't know if you necessarily feel good paying about him. The Colts on the other side here, they don't have any margin for error. And when it all goes right for the Colts, it really goes right for the Colts. And you've seen the emergence here of Michael Pittman Jr., the rookie. I think a lot of people expected T.Y. Hilton once again this year to come in and maybe be Phillip Rivers' guy and kind of be, you know, the offense almost moves through him and their running backs. It hasn't been T.Y. Hilton at all. Now it's Zach Pascal. Now it's the 5 run tight ends they have between Mo Alie-Cox, Jack Doyle was on the in concussion protocol, and Trey Burton. And Pittman's really stepped up. He's been injured the last 3 or 4 weeks, but he certainly jumps off the screen when you watch him. And it's Zach Pascal and it's Marcus Johnson. So it's all these kind of cast-offs. And when watching Phillip Rivers, it's like an out-of-body experience because you don't, when the ball leaves his hand, it's like, that's not going to work. And lo and behold, it's a guy in a crossing route. I feel like he only throws crossing routes.
We've said that for, what, 15 years? It's just such an ugly release.
Phillip's deep shot is when, like, your wife lets you get like Steak and Lobster on vacation. There's one a game. It's nowhere close. It's a special event. You have to do it to keep the defense honest, but it's got a 0% chance of working out.
I love that video clip of him, and I don't remember if it was Fox or CBS, where he just starts screaming, 65-yard touchdown, 60, and the defensive end, I can't remember who
was it against
was,
Jacksonville. I think it was against Jacksonville.
Was it Calais Campbell that was just like pointing at the
I
ref?
I think it was Yannick Ngakoue.
Okay. Well, he's just like, are you going to do something about this? But it was so entertaining because he is one of the more legendary trash talkers in the National Football League, but he doesn't always back up his play. Like, when I think Philip Rivers and watchable football, I think 2 minutes, and you just know he's going to throw a pick.
That
like
was the
two minutes to go. That's our time that we look forward to every single week. Phillip Rivers down by three, down by seven, and you know a pick or an interception is coming.
So how about this? A lot of people thought that was just a Phillip Rivers problem, and now the Chargers are doing the same thing. They're losing the same types of games. So I don't know if the universe doesn't like Stan Kroenke or what, but it's crazy to think back at Phillip Rivers. This guy's been doing it for like 20 plus years. Those early Chargers teams get a little nostalgic. It's really a shame he's gonna
Sean
retire.
Sean Merriman.
I mean, Quentin Jammer, Malcolm Floyd, Vincent LT. Jackson, Antonio Gates. Those teams were awesome. And he truly is a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. It's really unfortunate he's never gonna get the big one on the resume. But is there a less cool quarterback than Phillip Rivers? I was thinking this last night, maybe Daniel Jones. Is he the only one that's not as cool?
Daniel Jones would probably be the one that you would least likely to have a beer with of the starting quarterbacks in the National
League. If you sit down and order a beer, Daniel Jones is ordering a sparkling water.
What I was going to say, Daniel Jones, I don't think...
And the and lemon's not, on the side.
He and that's
the
not
lemons.
The little people who don't drink alcohol, but it's just like, if Daniel Jones is like... And even if you like got something, he would order some spritzer or just something very odd that you're just like... You just look at him and say, you're like, dude.
He would say the name of it and you would assume it was like a cocktail and then it would just be like a dressed up spritzer water.
He looks like an accountant that poses on the weekends as a Ralph Lauren model. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of like a famous suit place that he just fits. The
maybe Joseph A. Bank.
Yeah, Joseph A. Bank. That's probably he looks like that. So, but listen,
he's a drone guy. I definitely see him taking the drone out to the park. And
I got some talent. He's got some talent though.
But back to the Colts, they don't have much room for error. You see what happens when they can play a really dominant defense like Baltimore last week, even with Baltimore missing some of their key pieces. And it's really ugly. And it's almost like you don't have an ability to score at all because he ain't getting outside the pocket. And it can go really poorly if it's not right, but when it's right like it was on Thursday night, I mean, those two teams are me. They're just kind of meh teams.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if either of them won a playoff game, but anything further than that, I really
don't
expect that
meh team got all the way to the AFC Championship last year, and they were up on Kansas City, but so was Houston. We know what happened.
Lightning
there.
In a bottle, my friend.
They're just Patrick Mahomes and company just have so many weapons. So we've kind of gauged what happened on Thursday night. Let's gauge what happened this past weekend, just kind of the overall temperature of the NFL right now, which I think is going to be important. Now, the MVP candidates, let's go and list them. Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. Now, I mentioned to you last week, hey, is Josh Allen in that conversation? You said no. Is that something you'd reconsider down the stretch if the Bills continue to win? Because they got a big win against Seattle last week. We can't overstate that.
It depends how you define conversation. If your conversations, you want to be like one of those college award nominations where it's like 10 guys, yeah, he'd certainly be in something like that. But I mean, his odds right
it's
now.
It's like a quarterfinalist, you
yeah,
think?
Yeah, quarterfinalist okay. For the Davey O'Brien or the Bronco Nagurski. I don't consider him in real serious consideration when you want to talk about like the top three or four guys. But he's certainly
the
there.
Three I listed accurate in your opinion?
Yes, I do. I do think it's accurate. I don't think he's going to be, you know, I don't think a defensive player is really going to win it. But Aaron Donald also should be in the conversation just by virtue of how dominant he is at his position.
That's got to be frustrating as a defensive player.
I just think they're used to it at this point. I mean, of course it's frustrating, but is it frustrating because he's a, like, the subculture of NFL nerds know how good he is. And so that makes me wonder if, like, he almost appreciates the fact that he's lower key. Because I don't feel like a guy like Aaron Donald wants a spotlight. The definition of his position is to not want the spotlight.
People say that they don't want the spotlight. Larry Bird still did commercials. That's the example I always point to. It's like the most guy that it's the guy that everyone points to and say the biggest example of the guy that wants to, but he still did commercials. He still had sponsors. Some people might say they want it. Some people want it more. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Aaron truly doesn't want it. But I think back to like when Tyrann Mathieu had his year in 2011, Ndamukong Suh his year at Nebraska. I mean, there have been some dominant defensive players, not only at the college, but professional level. And you're just never going to give that award in college, in the NFL, outside of it being a defensive-only award to a defensive player. Like, for example, I'll give you this one. For Arkansas football, everyone thinks that Treylon Burks is the best player on the football team. They keep saying MVP candidate, it's Treylon Burks. But to me, it's Jalen Catalon. You're just not going to get the same credit on defense as you will on offense. I think Jalen Catalon has more of an impact on the Arkansas defense, the Arkansas football team, than Treylon Burks does on the Arkansas offense and Arkansas team.
If you want to go like replacement level, like if Burks didn't play, you could get a guy to maybe be 70% of him. And if Catalon doesn't play, you're looking at maybe 40% of him. It's much harder to make up the difference for Catalon position than it is Burks' position.
When he went out in the Texas A&M game, that defense looked completely different. Treylon Burks was injured for the Auburn game, and Franks had his best game of the year.
Yeah, and that just speaks to, I think, the overall science of football where guys want to play receiver and not say, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It takes a special personality to want to be the safety as opposed to the wide receiver because, I mean, it's Cuba Gooding Jr. in, what's the movie with Tom Cruise? Show me the money. We might have to cut this out.
We're not talking about radio.
No. I can't think of the name right now. But it's the point where it's like, of course, you want the girls go home.
Oh, you're talking about Jerry Maguire. I was drawing a blank on that.
But back to the MVP conversation here. That's why, and this is sort of the larger thing I wanted to talk about with the records and how you feel like NFL teams are right now. That's why you don't make deductions after week five, okay? And so if you, let's start with Josh Allen. He can have, six games here towards the end of the year and go crazy. So, of course, he's still in it. And we always make these deductions after week five and six. And I always just say, like, let's just wait and see because there's so many more important games to be played. And this script hasn't written itself yet. But if you want to look at the NFL as a big picture right now and you want to take into consideration the teams, I mean, we know Pittsburgh's the only undefeated team in the NFL right now. And I think what we kind of do is we'll talk ourselves into a team, then out of a team. Or maybe it's Tampa and then Tampa gets slaughtered. And then you're like, oh, well. Now,
which they did.
Then
last.
It switches to Green Bay. Yeah. And it's like, then Green Bay, just because they're maybe undefeated by virtue of them being undefeated, you talk yourselves into Green Bay. And then they go out and lose. And then you just kind of work your way down the line. You just want to keep talking yourself into these teams X. And I don't necessarily know if it works that way. Like, it's fine, to have a dud in there. Now, the way the Bucs lost it, that was very concerning. But
it is nice to see Drew Brees with his number one guy and Michael Thomas back. I'll go out on the record. I'll pull the cards out. Someone asked me about the Saints' chance at competing for a Super Bowl. I said Drew Brees looked like that he needs to be in a retirement home. He came and destroyed that really good Tampa Bay defense, and you saw two things. You saw what Drew Brees is when he has his number one weapon in Michael Thomas, and you saw the stupidity of Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles for keep running zone. You don't run zone against Drew Brees. He will carve you up all night, which is exactly what he did.
That was one of the... I heard someone say it's one of the worst game plans they've ever seen. It almost felt like Bruce Arians was just being... like determined in his ignorance, to have Brady in the entire game, still taking hits, still throwing deep. They ran the ball like five times. I don't understand him. I don't understand why he keeps throwing Brady under the bus. Is he trying to is he trying to just be that much of a jerk where you should like show the world that listen, this is my team. I don't understand why he's so defiant here.
That's a great question, and we've seen reports. I think Seth Wickersham is the guy that broke a lot of the Patriots. Belichick, Brady news, and we saw that it was really a lot behind closed doors that caused the destruction between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but with the, I almost said the Cardinals, but because that's his word, former coach, but for the Bucs, Bruce Arians just seems to be airing out the dirty laundry in the open, which I would think is unwise to do against the greatest quarterback of all time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's even motivating Tom more, but...
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't.
But would it shock you if Pittsburgh loses the division round? Especially with no fans,
if Pittsburgh did
the record being as it is 8-0. You go, I understand. Guess what? Other teams game plan too, and
depends
the NFL's
on who
hard
it
win.
Is.
24-19 against the Cowboys. Big Ben always sort of. All I'm saying is like this thing's very fluid to me, And even despite the records, I don't think there's a bunch of teams that stand out now that you just love. I think Kansas City is in a tier by their own. And it just goes back to the fact that you didn't watch that Panthers game. It stands out that much even more. When they need touchdowns, they just score. They just score touchdowns. Like, for as hard as it is, if you watch the Bears and you watch the Chiefs, it's like they play a different sport. When the Chiefs needed to score down the stretch, they scored every time they wanted to.
They do. Let's tie a bow on this segment with this. So through this point of the season, I know our opinions can change. It's sports radio. They change not just every week, every month, but every single day. When it comes to this point of the season, who's your MVP candidate, and who do you anticipate seeing the Super Bowl just through these number of games?
I'd probably say it's Russell Wilson right now, but I think Mahomes is going to pass him.
Okay.
That's just what I project.
His passing statistics the last couple weeks have been unreal.
Yeah, he has been.
He's combined for what, like 900 or 800 yards and like 9 touchdowns? 11,
yeah, 10 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns, something like that. I think it's 9 because I think he had 5-4. And as far as the Super Bowl goes, there's so many team with flaws here. Like, you can talk yourself in and out of Tampa. You can talk yourself in and out of New Orleans. You can talk yourself in and out of Baltimore, in and out of Pittsburgh. You can talk yourself in and out of Kansas City if you... The defense hasn't been fantastic, and at times, you know, Mahomes can drift, and there's not a lot to dislike there, but I would still say Kansas City is the overarching favorite here. It does look like that New Orleans here is really starting to kind of figure stuff out.
So you think New Orleans, little Drew Brees, and
I never like to overreact after a game, but that Bucs game was so bad, I'm almost out on him. That was so demoralized. At home, that was so one-sided. Like I said, you can throw out a lot of games and just not watch the film. That was so bad, I really do have pauses to what they can do in the playoffs. But of course, like we saw with the Titans last year, there's going to be a team that comes out of nowhere who gets healthy at the right time.
Maybe it could be your Ravens.
It could be. There's a lot of teams. And especially if this competition committee moves forward with this 8 teams, then we have, you know, 16 teams total. That'd be fun.
Coming up in the program, we are going to get into some fantasy football games today. How they're going to impact your team. Who do you need to start? Who do you need to sit? And who is going to be your guy? That's coming up on Fantasy Football Sunday. We'll also dive into the Fantasy Football Mailbag, which you can always email at fantasyfootball@hitthatline.com, as well as who should you take in your Survivor Leagues this week. That's coming up on Fantasy Football Sunday.
Missed any of Fantasy Football Sunday? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
From RotoWire and SiriusXM Fantasy. You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
We just talked about Thursday Night Football, kind of the temperature of the NFL. Well, you're asking, hey, who should I start this week, Ty and Evan? Who do I need to play today? Well, we got your answers for it. Evan, you got a number of games that you think are important in terms of fantasy football value. Just kind of start rattling some of those off, man.
Yeah, I know we've got to go quickly here. We'll start Washington and Detroit. Matt Stafford's back. It's a pretty good Washington defense. They rank pretty well in most defensive categories. I don't think there's Kenny Galladay this week, so you love T.J. Hockenson. Do you want to take a shot at Marvin Jones? Potentially. It's not necessarily the way I'd want to go. It looks like they're getting DeAndre Swift's touches up here a little bit. And I actually do like starting DeAndre Swift this week if you need to. I know the running back situations are always bad. And on the Washington side here, Gibson and McKissick, they're in both pretty good spots. It does feel like J.D. McKissick is kind of the guy here with Alex Smith. And obviously you start Terry McLaurin. Other than that, I don't really want to look Logan Thomas's way. Eagles, Giants, Miles Sanders here should be back. We always start Miles Sanders. There's no question about that. You start Travis Fulgham. He had the James Bradbury experience last time. Still had a pretty good game. If he gets Bradbury again this week, I think he has 5 for 72. So, you know, I still feel confident in starting Travis Fulgham, and I am. And Jalen Reagor's back. He's fun. He's the rookie wide receiver, which always inspires lots of excitement. I'm kind of interested to see what it looks like with him back in the lineup. I'm not chomping at the bit here to start Reagor this week, but I'm definitely keeping an eye on him. Dallas Goedert, not much production last week, but he is running tons of routes, and he's on the field 80% of the time, so he should be a good play. Results went there last week, but the process is there. You know, if Wayne Gallman's out, you can look Devontae Freeman's way. Hope he falls in the end zone. That's basically kind of where we're at there. If Freeman's out, then you can kind of look Wayne Gallman's way. Not a ton of excitement in the Giants' backfield, but they're still getting touches, and that matters. Sterling Shepard is the best wide receiver for the Giants, and he's a target monster. So I like starting Sterling Shepard, and you can start Evan Engram, even though watching him play, he leaves a lot to be desired.
Oh, yeah. Dude runs like a 4-4, and he drops balls left and right, and he's my fantasy football type.
He reminds you of the kid in like grade school who was super talented and just never really like tried.
Or cared.
Yeah, he didn't care at all.
I love, you know what my favorite wide receiver in that group is? It's got to be Darius Slayton. I love watching that guy play football. Former Auburn Tiger, and I know Sterling Shepard's there. Your guy, Golden Tate's there as well. But it has to be. Slayton is just so fast. He just uncorks the top of the defense.
He's a force. He's a force. There's no question about that. Packers, Jags. Packers give up a lot of yards on the ground, not much through the air. Love James Robinson this week. I would watch and see if Jair Alexander's on DJ Shark. If Jair Alexander, who left the game last week on Thursday with the concussion injury, if he does play against Shark, I probably would want to look somewhere else. If Alexander is out of the game, I feel pretty good about starting Shark. Watch the weather here, too. This one's supposed to be nasty. If the conditions look really bad, you might look other ways, especially, you know, when you talk about pass catchers and quarterbacks. And then on the Packer side, man, it does not get any better than this. I was trying to think of a feeling this good, and what I got to was after you wrap up your semester tests and, you know, you got good grades, because having Davante Adams and Aaron Jones going against the Jaguars, it doesn't get much better than that. That is the pinnacle of life, my friend.
That's the highest spread, I think, this week. And we'll get into what survivor picks you should get into coming up. And if you have the Packers left, easy play this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Let's move on here to the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns. Pretty fun game. I'm looking forward to watching this one. Once again, in Cleveland, right on the lake there, we're supposed to have bad weather. Maybe 22-mile-per-hour wind, so I'd keep an eye on that. And that does discourage my pass catchers a little bit, you know, depending on who you have and where you can look. Houston's bad everywhere defensively, so Nick Chubb should be back. There's no question you start Nick Chubb. We've seen Kareem Hunt is just fine running next to Nick Chubb. They can support both. So
that's a fun backfield to watch when both those guys are healthy.
It almost feels like Hunt maybe needs Chubb there.
You think so?
I mean, it feels like he does better when Chubb's in the backfield. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but maybe he just kind of likes being that number two. Jarvis Landry's a great play this week, especially because the winds are going to be so high. You'd think maybe you go underneath. Austin Hooper should be healthy. He's a good play. The one that I think everyone's kind of circling here at Houston is Duke Johnson, because David Johnson, watched his status, is supposed to, you know, I think he's in concussion protocol. He's hurt, and he may not play. Yeah, I'll start Duke Johnson if David Johnson's out. But just like C.D. Carter told you, Duke Johnson's known for catching passes. Deshaun Watson doesn't necessarily check it down that much. So it's something to monitor. But, you know, a lot of people aren't going to have much better options than Duke Johnson just because he's in a high-powered offense and he is going to be on the field as the number one guy. Will Fuller, yes. Brandon Cooks, yes. Those guys are awesome every single week. Tampa, Carolina. Not a great matchup for Teddy Bridgewater. Pretty Bridgewater, all-time real-life football, awesome player. For some reason, it just does not translate over to fantasy the way you wanted it to. Maybe it's because they always get down there and hand it off to Mike Davis or McCaffrey when he's healthy. But the guy's just a solid player. Now, for some reason, it's not translating to the fantasy side, but that is what it is.
Unfortunately, yes, because I had to start him one night. I still won because of Dalvin, but I was not satisfied with the production of Teddy Bridgewater in that Thursday night.
That was a rain game, too. Dalvin Cook covers lots of wounds. No Christian McCaffrey this week. I'd say, if you have waited the McCaffrey game, and you've waited 6-7 weeks for him to come back, and then he comes back and this happens. I know he just got traded in our league because the guy's like, I got to win right now. He traded for Josh Jacobs and CeeDee Lamb, and you got to win right now. You have to have a guy out there. You know, I totally get it. Mike Davis has been the pickup of the year, hasn't he? I don't think many people expected McCaffrey to be out as long as he is. This guy is a walking running back too, and sometimes he's an RB1. And you're getting another week out of Mike Davis. And if McCaffrey's out next week, you got another week. So it's really been great for those. I know he went for lots of fab at the beginning of the year, and people were unsure because you know he was a rental. Well, that rental's really worked out, and that's turned into a half the year thing.
That's a great point.
Robbie Anderson, he's the one guy in my mind where like his role does not change. It's short targets, it's a dump off, but it's usually good for 8 for 74, and that's enough. The question is DJ Moore or Curtis Samuel. DJ Moore is the first round talent. DJ Moore is probably the more talented player. But without Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel's getting the carries, and he's been absolutely on fire the last few weeks. I don't feel good about starting both of them. If I had to lean one right now just because of how hot he's been, how hot the hand's been, I'd probably go Curtis Samuel. And, you know, going up against a pretty stout Tampa defense, last week kind of shook me on that.
Again, that was back to game plan. It's like we talked about earlier. You don't zone Drew Brees. He'll pick you apart. He's not going to beat you a lot of times, maybe at least from this season, relative to other quarterbacks that we know that at their same level. But it was just odd to see what Todd Bowles and Bruce Arians were doing on Sunday night.
Definitely, definitely. I'm fairly certain Bruce Arians hates fantasy football because the running back situation is awful. I guess if you had to go one this week, you'd say Leonard Fournette just to the just because of the air options. But Ronald Jones got Arianced. And when you get Arianced, you are not on the field and therefore cannot score fantasy points. Dart throw for the Bucs wide receivers. I guess if I have all three, I'm starting all three. The one thing here that makes this kind of tough is we don't have a good enough sample size for how all three look, because you've had one game and it was a dud. And Gronkowski, yes. Raiders, Broncos, yes, Melvin Gordon. I'd start Jerry Jeudy. Yes, Fant, if he's healthy, keep an eye on that. Between Ruggs and Aguilar, you lean Aguilar. He's been the hot one. They're basically the same player. Aguilar seems to be finding the end zone here. And Jacobs, yes. Walla, yes. Chargers, Dolphins. This is a really fun game. Mike Williams might be shadowed by Xavier Howard. If that's the case, might look other way with Mike Williams.
Out of the rookie quarterbacks, yeah.
It sure is.
Herbert and Tua.
Keenan Allen, you always start Keenan Allen. He's been absolutely awesome. We talked to CD about it. I don't really know. There's not a great answer for the Chargers running backs. I think I'd go Ballage right now, as long as he gets called back up from the practice squad, because he seemed to be the guy that had the most juice amongst basically replacement level players. Buffalo, Arizona, Josh Allen, yes. Stephon Diggs, yes. John Brown, yes. He's back. It does start to look like Zach Moss is really taking the workload here from Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary, almost droppable. I know the clock's going. Keep an eye on Kenyon Drake. He may be back, but I'd still go Edmonds. I'm not starting Kenyon Drake this week. And just a little circle it and highlight it. Tre'Davious White versus DeAndre Hopkins. That's a lot of fun.
That's a lot of games that we got in there.
Christian Kirk, also great play, because Christian Kirk quietly has been killing it here, and it feels like he always finds the end zone.
All right, let's round it out with two themes. Who we're going with Survivor this week, and then, of course,
Mail Time.
Mail Time.
Mail Time.
The mail is here.
Now it's time to go to the fantasy football mailbag.
Who's our emailer this week?
We got Jacob from Van Buren. My league mate, Sam, has an awful team, garbage roster, and lowest point total by a good margin. However, he's 5-4 and poised to make the playoffs. What's your opinion using points for as a deciding metric for playoff eligibility? My stance, if you're last in points, you should be ineligible, and it should go to the next team in line. This is thinking outside the box here, and I don't hate it. I don't hate Jacob's submission here. I've always thought, too, you could do kind of like a BCS thing in the NFL where a win against Kansas City holds a lot more juice than a win against Jacksonville. You'd have to rewrite everything, and it would be hard to get that implemented.
Quite an algorithm for fantasy football.
I mean, fantasy football, it is wild, and sometimes you just have the year from hell where you had the most points scored against you, and you're scoring points, and you look around, and there's guys in your league who have 80% of the points you have, and they're 5-4. They're 7-3 because it's happened to work out that way. I think there's some validity to what he's saying. I absolutely do think you can, like, maybe you just have it as simple as if you're last in points, no playoffs. Maybe it can be that simple. Now, you're setting a new precedent there, and you're really kind of changing the way this has been done forever. But guess what? Once upon a time, women couldn't vote, and that changed pretty quickly, didn't it? So I'm all for change. I'm all for innovation.
What an example. All right, last thing we're going to get to, Survivor League. Do I take the Pittsburgh Steelers taking on the Bengals at home, or do I take the New Orleans Saints taking on the San Francisco 49ers at home? Those are the picks I'm going
They'll
with.
They'll both win. You need to go with your gut here, Danielson, because the last thing I'm going to do is give you the bad pick 10 weeks in here.
That's fair. That's fair. For Evan Gentry, I'm Ty Richardson. This has been Fantasy Football Sunday. Don't spend the rest of Sunday sitting on your hands. Go set your lineup and go get a dub.
Hey, this is Jason Fitz from ESPN, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
This is former Arkansas football coach Ken Hatfield.
This is Jarius Wright.
Hey, this is Billy Ray Smith Jr.
Hey, everybody, this is Justin Moore.
This is Governor Asa Hutchinson.
This is Tony Bua.
This is Coach Musk.
Hey, this is Barry Odom.
This is former coach Houston Nutt, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Weekdays from 6 till 9.